Chapter 18. As the Plow Breaks the Earth. Seizing Sidene long enough to unknot the ward he had woven across one corner of the anteroom, Rand raised his small silver mountain cup and said, "More tea." Luz Theron muttered angrily in the back of his head. Carved chairs, heavy with gilt, stood in paired leather side of a golden two paces wide, set into the polished stone floor, and another tall chair so gilded it seemed entirely gold, topped a small dais that was just as elaborate. But he sat cross-legged on a carpet, spread for the occasion, green and gold and blue, in a Tyran maze. The three clan chiefs seated across from him would have disliked him receiving them from a chair, even if they were offered their own. They were another maze to be trod on warily. He was in his shirt, sleeves pushed up his forearms to expose the red and gold dragon that curled around each, glittering metallically. The Aielman's cotton sore covered theirs, on the left arm alone. Perhaps the reminder of who he was, that he too had been to Roydeon when the journey meant death for most men who entered. Perhaps it was unnecessary. Perhaps. Those three faces gave away little as they watched Marana come from the corner where she had been sealed off. Janwin's creased face had been carved from old wood, but it always looked that way, and if his blue-gray eyes seemed stormy, so did they always, too. Even his hair looked like storm clouds. He was an even-tempered man, though. Indirian and one-eyed Mandalayne might have been thinking of something else, except that their unblinking gazes followed her. Luz Theron sudden silent, as if he too watched through Rand's eyes. Mirana's ageless features revealed even less than the clan chief's. Smoothing her pale gray skirts under, she knelt beside Rand and lifted the teapot. A massive ball of gold-washed silver, with leopards for feet and handle, and another crouched on the lid, it required both of her hands, and wavered a little as she carefully filled Rand's cup. Her manner seemed to say she did this because she wanted to, for reasons of her own that none of them could begin to understand. Her manner shouted Aes Sedai, louder than her face did. Was that to the good or the bad? "I do not allow them to channel without permission," he said. The clan chiefs kept silent. Morana rose and moved to kneel beside each in turn. Mandalayne covered his cup with a broad hand to indicate he wanted no more. The other two held out theirs, blue-gray eyes and green alike, studying her. What did they see? What more could he do? Replacing the heavy teapot on the thick, leopard-handled tray, she remained on her knees.
"May I serve my Lord Dragon in any way else?"
Her voice was self-possession itself, but after he motioned her back to her corner, after she had risen and turned, slim hands clutched at her skirts for an instant. Yet that might have been because turning brought her to face Dashiva and Narishima. The two Ashaman, to be precise, Narishima was still only a soldier, the lowest level of Ashaman, with neither the sword nor the dragon on his collar. The Ashaman stood impassively between two of the tall, golden-framed mirrors that lined the walls. At least the younger man looked impassive, at first glance. Thumbs tucked behind his sword belt, he ignored Marana and paid little more attention to Rand or the Aielman. Yet at a second glance you saw that his dark, too big eyes never rested, as if he expected the unexpected to leap out of the air any moment. And who could say it would not? Dashiva appeared to have his head in the clouds. His lips moved soundlessly, and he blinked and frowned at nothing. Luz Theron snarled when Rand looked at the Ashaman. But it was Marana who occupied the dead man inside Rand's head.
"Only a fool thinks a lion or a woman can truly be tamed."
Irritably, Rand suppressed the voice to a muted buzz. Luz Theron could break through, but not without effort. Grabbing hold of Sidene, he rewove the ward that shut Marana away from their voices. Releasing the source again increased his irritation, the hissing in his head, the water drops on red coals. An echo pulsing in time with Luz Theron's mad, distant rage. Marana stood behind the barrier she could neither see nor feel, head high and hands folded at her waist, as if a shawl were looped over her arms. Aes Sedai to her toenails. She watched him and the clan chiefs with cool eyes, light brown, flecked with yellow. "My sisters do not all realize how very much we need you," she had told him this morning in this very room. "But all of us who swore will do whatever you ask. That would not violate the three oaths." He had just wakened when she came with Soralea escorting her. Neither seemed to care at all that he was still in a robe, with only one bite taken from his breakfast bread. "I have more than a little skill in negotiation and mediation. My sisters have other skills. Let us serve you as we pledged. Let me serve you. We need you, but you have some need of us, too." Ever present, Elana lay nestled in a corner of his brain. She was weeping again. He could not understand why she wept so often. He had forbidden her to come near him unless summoned, or leave a room without an escort of maidens. The sisters who had sworn to him had been found rooms last night, in the palace where he could keep an eye on them. But he had sensed tears from the moment she bonded him. Tears and a raw grief like being ripped by claws. Sometimes it was less, sometimes more. Yet always there. Elana also had told him he needed the sworn sisters, screamed it at him finally, with her face red and tears rolling down her cheeks, before literally running from his presence. And she had spoken of serving too, though he doubted that Mirana's present tasks were what either had in mind. Perhaps some sort of livery would make it clear? The clan chiefs watched Mirana watch them, not so much as the flicker of an eyelash betrayed their thoughts. "The wise ones have told you where the Aes Sedai stand," Rand said bluntly. Soralea had told him they knew, but the fact would have been clear from the lack of surprise when they first saw Mirana fetch and curtsy. "You've seen her bring the tray and pour your tea. You've seen her come and go as I say. If you want, I'll have her dance a jig." Convincing the Aiel that he was not on the end of an Aes Sedai leash was the most needed service any of the sisters could do him right now. He would have them all doing jigs if necessary. Mandalayne adjusted the gray-green patch over his right eye, the way he did when he wanted a moment to think. A thick, puckered scar ran up his forehead from behind the leather patch and halfway across his mostly bald head. When he finally spoke, it was only a little less blunt than Rand. "Some say an Aes Sedai will do anything to have what she wants." Indirian lowered heavy white brows and peered down his long nose at his tea. Of only average height for an Aielman, he was shorter than Rand by half a hand, yet everything about him seemed long. The heat of the waist appeared to have melted away every spare ounce of flesh, and a few more besides. His cheekbones stood out sharp, and his eyes were emeralds set in caves.
"I do not like speaking of Aes Sedai."
His deep, rich voice was always a shock coming from that gaunt face.
"What is done is done. Let the wise ones deal with them."
"Better to speak of the Shido dogs," Janwin said mildly, which was almost as great a shock coming from his fierce face. "Within a few months, less than half a year at most, every Shido who can be will be dead or made Gaishin." Just because his voice was soft did not mean he was. The other two nodded. Mandalayne smiled eagerly. They still seemed unconvinced. The Shido had been the professed reason for this meeting, and no less important for not being the most important. Not unimportant, the Shido had made trouble long enough, just not on the same page with the Aes Sedai in his book. They did present problems, though. Three clans joining Timelin's Mia Goma already near Kinslayer's Dagger might well be able to do as Janwin said, but there were those who could not be made Gaishin and could not be killed. Some were more critical than others. "What of the wise ones?" he asked. For a moment, their faces became unreadable. Not even Aes Sedai could do that so well as Aiel. Facing the one power did not frighten them, not where it showed, at least. No one could outrun death, so Aiel believed,
and 100 Aes Sedai in a rage could not make a lone Aiel lower the veil once raised. But learning that wise ones had taken part in the fighting at Dumai's Wells had hit them like watching the sun rise by night and the moon by day in a blood-red sky.
Sarinda tells me almost all of the wise ones will run with the Algide Siswai,
Indirian said at last, reluctantly. Sarinda was the wise one who had followed him from Red Springs, clanhold of the Kodara. Or perhaps followed was not the right word. Wise ones seldom did. In any case, most of the Kodara wise ones, and the Shianda, and the Darain, would go north with the spears.
The Shido wise ones will be dealt with by wise ones.
His mouth twisted with disgust. All things change. Jenwin's voice was even softer than usual. He believed, but he did not want to. Wise ones taking part in battle violated custom as old as the Aiel. Mandalayne set his cup down with exaggerated care. Corahwin wishes to see Jer again before the dream ends, and so do I. Like Bale and Ruark, he had two wives. The other chiefs had only one each, except Timelin. But a widowed chief seldom remained so long. The wise one saw to that if he did not. Will any of us ever see the sun rise again in the threefold land?
I hope so, Rand said slowly. As the plow breaks the earth, shall he break the lives of men, and all that was shall be consumed in the fire of his eyes. The trumpets of war shall sound at his footsteps, the ravens feed at his voice, and he shall wear a crown of swords.
The prophecies of the dragon gave little hope for anything except victory over the Dark One, and only a chance of that. The prophecy of Roedion, the Aiel prophecy, said he would destroy them. The bleakness swept through the clans because of him, and ancient customs were ripped apart. Even without the Aes Sedai, small wonder if some chiefs pondered whether they were right to follow Randall Thor, dragons on his arms or no.
I hope so.
May you always find water and shade, Randall Thor, Indirian said.
After they left, Rand sat frowning into his cup, finding no answers in the dark tea. Finally, he set it beside the tray and pushed his sleeves down. Mirana's eyes were intent on him, as if trying to pull out his thoughts. There was a hint of impatience about her, too. He had told her to stay in the corner unless she could hear voices. Doubtless, she saw no reason why she should not come out, now the clan chiefs were gone. Come out and dig out what had been said.
"Do you think they believe I dance on Aes Sedai strings?" he said.
Young Narishima gave a start. In truth, he was a little older than Rand, but he had the look of a boy 5 or 6 years younger. He glanced at Mirana, as though she had the answer, and shifted his shoulders uncomfortably.
"I do not know, my lord dragon."
Dashiva blinked and stopped murmuring to himself. Tilting his head, bird-like, he eyed Rand sideways.
"Does it matter, so long as they obey?"
"It matters," Rand said. Dashiva shrugged, and Narishima frowned thoughtfully. Neither seemed to understand, yet maybe Narishima could come to. Maps littered the stone floor behind the throne on its dais, rolled or folded or spread out where he had left them. He shifted some with the toe of his boot. So much to be juggled at once. Northern Kyrian and the mountains called Kinslayer's Dagger, and the region around the city. Ilion and the plains of Moredo out to Farmatting. The island of Tarvalen and all the surrounding towns and villages. Gildan and part of Amadisia. Movement and color in his head. Luz Theron moaned and laughed in the distance, faint, mad mutters of killing the Ashaman, killing the Forsaken, killing himself. Alana stopped weeping, cutting anguish subdued beneath the thin thread of anger. Rand scrubbed his hands through his hair, pressing hard against his temples. What had it been like to be alone inside his own skull? He could not recall. One of the tall doors opened to admit one of the maidens who were standing guard in the corridor.
Rylan, with vivid yellow-red hair and a grin for everything, actually managed to appear plump. For a maiden, anyway. Berylaine Sir Payendrag and Nora Larison wish to see the Karakarn, she announced. Her voice went from warm and friendly on the first name to cold and flat on the second without disturbing her grin. Rand sighed and opened his mouth to let them enter, but Berylaine did not wait. She stormed in, a somewhat calmer Anura at her heels. The Aes Sedai shied slightly at the sight of Dashiva and Narishima, and stared curiously when she saw Mirana standing in her corner. Not so Berylaine.
"What is the meaning of this, my lord dragon?" she demanded, brandishing the letter he had delivered to her this morning. She stalked across the floor to shake it under his nose. "Why am I to return to Mayenne? I have governed well here in your name, and you know it. I could not stop Kolover having herself crowned, but at least I stopped her changing the laws you made. Why am I to be sent away? And why am I told by letter, not to my face? By letter! Thanked for my services and dismissed like a clerk who's done collecting the taxes."
Even furious, the First of Mayenne was one of the most beautiful women Rand had ever seen. Black hair fell in shining waves to her shoulders, framing a face to make a blind man stare. A man could easily drown in her dark eyes. Today she wore shimmering silver silk, thin and clinging, and more suited to entertaining a lover in private. In fact, had the neckline been a hair lower, she would not have been able to wear the dress in public. As it was, he was not sure she should. He had told himself, when writing that letter, that it was because he had too much to do and no time for arguing with her. The truth was, he enjoyed looking at her too much. For some reason, he had begun feeling that that was not exactly wrong, but almost. As soon as she appeared, Luz Theron gave over ranting to hum softly, the way he did when admiring a woman. Abruptly, Rand realized he was thumbing his earlobe and felt a shock. Instinctively, he knew that was something else Luz Theron did without thinking, like the humming. He pushed his hand to his side, but for an instant it wanted to rise to his ear again.
"Burn you, this is my body."
The thought was a snarl.
"Mine."
Luz Theron's hum stopped in surprise and confusion. Without a sound, the dead man fled back into the deepest shadows of Rand's brain. Rand's silence had an effect. Berylaine lowered the letter, and her anger receded. A little. Eyes fixed on his, she drew a deep breath that heated his cheeks.
"My lord dragon."
"You know why," he cut in. Looking only at her eyes was not easy. Oddly, he found himself wishing Min were there. Very odd. Her viewings would be no help now. "When you returned from that seafolk ship this morning, there was a fellow waiting on the dock with a knife." Berylaine tossed her head contemptuously.
"He came no closer than 3 steps. I was accompanied by a dozen of the winged guards and Lord Captain Gallienne."
Nurella had led some of the winged guards to Demise Wells, but Gallienne commanded the guards as a whole. She had 800 of them in the city, aside from those who returned with Nurella.
"You expect me to turn tail because of a cut purse?"
"Don't play the fool," he growled. "A cut purse with a dozen soldiers around you?"
Color flared in her cheeks. She knew all right. He gave her no chance for protests or explanations or any other foolishness. "Dobrain tells me he's already heard whispers in the palace that you betrayed Kolover. Those who supported her might be afraid to say boo to me, but they'll pay to have a knife stuck into you."
And Fael, too, according to Dobrain.
That was being taken care of.
"But they won't have a chance because you are going back to Mayenne. Dobrain will take your place here until Elaine claims the Sun Throne."
She spluttered as if he had dumped cold water down her dress. Her eyes grew dangerously large. He had been glad when she stopped being afraid of him, but now he was not so sure. As she opened her mouth to explode, Anura touched her arm and her head whipped around. They exchanged a long look and Berylaine's sputters subsided. She smoothed her skirts and vigorously squared her shoulders. Rand looked away hastily. Mirana hovered at the edge of the ward. He wondered whether she had stepped across and dodged back. How else could she stand right on top of what she could not possibly detect? When his head turned, she moved backward until she almost touched the walls, her eyes never leaving him. By her face, she would have poured his tea every day for 10 years to hear what was being said.
"My lord dragon," Verlaine said, smiling, "there is still the matter of the Athan Mier."
Her voice was warm honey. The curve of her lips would have sparked thoughts of kisses in a stone.
"The wave Mistress Harine is not pleased to be left sitting on her ship so long. I have visited with her a number of times. I can smooth the difficulties there, which I hardly think Lord Dobrain can. I believe the sea folk are vital to you, whether or not the prophecies of the dragon mention them. You are crucial in their prophecies, though they seem reluctant to say exactly how."
Rand stared. Why was she struggling so hard to keep a difficult job that had offered few thanks from Kyrianen, even before some began wanting to kill her? She was a ruler, used to dealing with rulers and embassies, not street thugs and knives in the dark. Warm honey or no warm honey, it was not for any desire to stay near Randall Thor. She had, well, offered herself to him, once. But the hard fact was that Mayenne was a small country, and Berlaine used her beauty as a man would a sword, to keep her land from being swallowed by its more powerful neighbor, Tyr. And there, simple as that, he had it. "Berlaine, I don't know what else I can do to guarantee Mayenne for you, but I will write out any—" Colors swirled so strongly in his head that his tongue froze. Luz Theron cackled. "A woman who knows the danger and isn't afraid is a treasure only a madman would spurn."
"Guarantees."
Bleakness engulfed honey, and anger bubbled again, cold this time. Anura plucked at Berlaine's sleeve, but she paid the Aes Sedai no heed.
"While I sit in Mayenne with your guarantees, others will serve you. They will ask their rewards, and the service I did here will be faded and old, while theirs is bright and new. If the High Lord Wyroman gives you Ilion and asks Mayenne in return, what will you say? If he gives you Murindi and Altara and everything clear to the Arith Ocean?"
"Will you serve, if it still means leaving?" he asked quietly. "You will be out of my sight, but not out of my mind."
Luz Theron laughed again, in such a way that Rand nearly blushed. He enjoyed looking, but sometimes the things Luz Theron thought. Berlaine considered him with stubborn eyes, and he could all but see the questions being toted up behind Anura's, the careful choosing of which to ask. The door opened again for Rylan.
"An Aes Sedai has come to see the Karakhan."
She managed to sound cold and uncertain at the same time.
"Her name is Cadsoane Maladrin."
A strikingly handsome woman swept in right behind her, iron gray hair gathered in a bun atop her head and decorated with dangling gold ornaments, and it seemed everything happened at once.
"I thought you were dead,"
Anura gasped, eyes nearly starting out of her head. Mirana darted through the ward, hands outstretched.
"No, Cadsoane," she screamed. "You mustn't harm him. You must not."
Rand's skin tingled as someone in the room embraced Sayadar, perhaps more than one, and swiftly moving well clear of Berlaine, he seized hold of the source, flooding himself with Sayadine, feeling it fill the Ashaman. Dashiva's face twitched as he glared from one Aes Sedai to another. Despite the power he held, Narishima grasped his sword hilt with both hands and assumed the stance called Leopard in the Tree, on the brink of drawing. Luz Theron snarled of killing and death. "Kill them all. Kill them now." Rylan raised her veil, shouting something, and suddenly a dozen maidens were in the room, veiling, spears ready. It was hardly surprising that Berlaine stood gaping as if everyone had gone mad. For someone who had caused all that, this Cadsoane seemed remarkably unaffected. She looked at the maidens and shook her head, golden stars and moons and birds swaying gently.
"Trying to grow decent roses in northern Gildan may be near to death, Anura," she said dryly, "but it is not quite the grave. Oh, do calm down, Mirana, before you frighten someone. One would think you would have grown a little less excitable since putting off Novice White."
Mirana opened and closed her mouth, looking abashed of all things, and the tingling vanished abruptly. Rand did not release Sayadin, though, nor did the Ashaman.
"Who are you?" he demanded. "What Aja?"
Read by Mirana's reaction, but for a Red Sister simply to walk in like this, alone, would require suicidal courage.
"What do you want?"
Cad Swain's gaze lingered on him for no more than a moment, and she did not answer. Mirana's lips parted, but the gray-haired woman looked at her, raising one eyebrow, and that was that. Mirana actually reddened and lowered her eyes. Anura was still staring at the newcomer as if at a ghost, or a giant. Without a word, Cad Swain swept across the room to the two Ashaman, dark green divided skirts swishing. Rand was beginning to get the feeling that she always moved in that rushing glide, graceful yet wasting no time, and allowing nothing to impede her. Dashiva stared her up and down and sneered. Although looking him straight in the face, she did not seem to notice, any more than she appeared to notice Narishima's hands on his sword when she put a finger under his chin, moving his head from side to side before he could jerk back.
"What lovely eyes," she murmured.
Narishima blinked uncertainly, and Dashiva's sneer turned to a grin, but a nasty one that made his former smirk lighthearted in comparison.
"Do nothing," Rand snapped.
Dashiva had the gall to glower at him before sullenly pressing a fist to his chest in the salute the Ashaman used.
"What do you want here, Cad Swain?"
Rand went on.
"Look at me, burn you!"
She did, turning just her head.
"So you are Randall Thor, the Dragon Reborn. I'd have thought even a child like Moraine could have taught you a few manners."
Rylan put the spear from her right hand with those clutched behind her buckler and flashed maiden hand talk. For once, none laughed. For once, Rand was sure the talk was not a joke about him.
"Be easy, Rylan," he said, raising a hand. "All of you be easy."
Cad Swain ignored the byplay, too, directing a smile to Berlane.
"So this is your Berlane, Anura.
She is more beautiful than I had heard." The curtsy she made, bowing her head, was quite deep, yet somehow without any suggestion of obeisance, no hint that she was in any way less. It truly was a curtsy, no more.
"My Lady First of Mayenne, I must speak with this young man, and I would retain your adviser. I've heard you've undertaken many duties here. I would not keep you from them."
It was as clear a dismissal as could be, short of holding the door open. Berlane inclined her head graciously, then smoothly turned to Rand and spread her skirts in a curtsy so deep that he worried whether she would remain even as clothed as she was.
"My Lord Dragon," she intoned, "I ask your kind permission to withdraw."
Rand's return bow was not so practiced.
"Granted, my lady first, as you wish."
He offered her a hand to help her rise. "I hope you will consider my proposal."
"My Lord Dragon, I will serve you wherever and however you desire."
Her voice was all honey again. For Cad Swain's benefit, he supposed. There was certainly no flirtation on her voice, only determination.
"Remember, Harin," she added in a whisper.
When the door closed behind Berylane, Cad Swain said,
"It's always good to see children play, don't you think, Mirana?"
Mirana goggled, head swiveling between Rand and the gray-haired sister. Anura looked as though only willpower held her upright. Most of the maidens followed Berylane, apparently deciding there was to be no killing, but Rylan and two others remained before the door, still veiled. It might have been coincidence that there was one for each Aes Sedai. Dashiva also seemed to think any danger passed. He leaned back against the wall with a foot propped, lips moving silently, arms folded, apparently watching the Aes Sedai. Narishima frowned questioningly at Rand, but Rand only shook his head. The woman was deliberately trying to provoke him. The question was, why provoke a man she must know could still her, or kill her, without exerting himself? Luce Theron muttered the same thing.
Why?
Stepping onto the dais, Rand took up the dragon scepter from the throne and sat, waiting to see what would happen. The woman was not going to succeed.
Rather ornate, wouldn't you say?
Cadswain said to Onura, looking around. Aside from all the other gold, broad bands of it ran around the walls above the mirrors, and the cornices were nearly 2 feet of golden scales.
I've never known whether Karyanin or Tyrans overdo worse, but either can make an Ebu Dari blush, or even a tinker. Is that a tea tray? I would like some if it's fresh and hot.
Channeling, Rand scooped up the tray, half expecting to see the metal corrode from the taint, and wafted it to the three women. Mirana had brought extra cups, and four still stood unused on the tray. He filled three, replaced the teapot, and waited. It floated in midair, supported by Saidine. Three very different women in appearance, and three distinctly different reactions. Onura looked at the tray, much as one might a coiled viper, gave a tiny shake of her head, and took a small step back. Mirana drew a deep breath and slowly picked up a cup with a hand that trembled slightly. Knowing a man could channel and being forced to see it were not at all the same. Cadswain, though, took her cup and sniffed the vapors with a pleased smile. Nothing could tell her which of the three men had poured the tea, yet she looked across her cup straight at Rand, lounging with one leg over the arm of his chair.
"That's a good boy," she said.
The maidens passed shocked looks above their veils. Rand quivered. No, she would not provoke him. For whatever reason, that was what she wanted, and she would not. "I will ask one more time," he said. Strange that his voice could be that cold. Instead, he was hotter than the hottest fires of Saidine. "What do you want? Answer or leave. By the door or a window. Your choice." Again Mirana began to speak, and again Cadswain silenced her, this time by a sharp gesture, without looking away from him.
"To see you," she said calmly. "I am green, Alja, not red, but I have worn the shawl longer than any other sister living, and I have faced more men who could channel than any four reds, maybe than any 10. Not that I hunted them, you understand, but I seem to have a nose."
Calmly, a woman saying she had been to market once or twice in her life.
"Some fought to the bitter end, kicking and screaming even after they were shielded and bound. Some wept and begged, offering gold, anything, their very souls not to be taken to Tarvalen. Still others wept from relief, meek as lambs, thankful finally to be done with it. Light's truth, they all weep at the end. There is nothing left for them but tears at the end."
The heat inside him erupted in a rage. Tray and massive teapot hurtled across the room, smashing a mirror with a thunderous crash and bouncing back in a shower of glass. Half-flattened pot spraying tea, tray spinning across the floor bent double. Everyone jumped except Cadswain. Rand leaped from the dais, clutching the dragon scepter so hard his knuckles hurt. "Is that supposed to frighten me?" he growled. "Do you expect me to beg or to be thankful, to weep? Aes Sedai, I could close my hand and crush you!" The hand he held up shook with fury. "Mirana knows why I should. The light only knows why I don't." The woman looked at the battered tea things as if she had all the time in the world.
"Now you know," she said at last, calm as ever, "that I know your future and your present. The light's mercy fades to nothing for a man who can channel. Some see that and believe the light denies those men. I do not. Have you begun to hear voices yet?"
"What do you mean?"
he asked slowly. He could feel Luce Theron listening. The tingle returned to his skin, and he very nearly channeled, but all that happened was that the teapot rose and floated to Cadsuane, turning slowly in the air for her to examine.
"Some men who can channel begin to hear voices."
She spoke almost absently, frowning at the flattened sphere of silver and gold.
"It is a part of the madness. Voices conversing with them, telling them what to do."
The teapot drifted gently to the floor by her feet.
"Have you heard any?"
Startlingly, Dashiva gave a raucous laugh, shoulders shaking. Narishima wet his lips. He might not have been afraid of the woman before, but now he watched her closely as a scorpion.
"I will ask the questions," Rand said firmly. "You seem to forget. I am the dragon reborn."
"You are real, aren't you?" he wondered.
There was no answer.
"Luce Theron?"
Sometimes the man did not answer, but Aes Sedai always drew him.
"Luce Theron?"
He was not mad. The voice was real, not imagination.
"Not madness."
A sudden desire to laugh did not help. Cadsuane sighed.
"You are a young man who has little idea where he is going or why or what lies ahead. You seem overwrought. Perhaps we can speak when you are more settled. Have you any objection to my taking Mirana and Anura away for a little while? I've seen neither in quite some time."
Rand gaped at her. She swooped in, insulted him, threatened him, casually announced she knew about the voice in his head, and with that she wanted to leave and talk with Mirana and Anura.
Is she mad?
Still no answer from Luce Theron. The man was real. He was.
"Go away," he said. "Go away and..."
He was not mad.
"All of you, get out! Get out!"
Dashiva blinked at him, tilting his head, then shrugged and started for the door. Cadsuane smiled in such a way that he half expected her to tell him again he was a good boy, then gathered up Mirana and Anura and herded them toward the maidens, who were lowering their veils and frowning worriedly. Narishima looked at him too, hesitating until Rand gestured sharply. Finally, they were all gone, and he was alone. Alone. Convulsively, he hurled the dragon scepter. The spear point stuck quivering in the back of one of the chairs, the tassels swaying.
"I am not mad," he said to the empty room.
Luce Theron had told him things. He would never have escaped Galena's chest without the dead man's voice. But he had used the power before he ever heard the voice. He had figured out how to call lightning and hurl fire and form a construct that had killed hundreds of Trollocs. But then, maybe that had been Luce Theron, like those memories of climbing trees in a plum orchard, and entering the Hall of the Servants, and a dozen more that crept up on him unawares. And maybe those memories were all fancies, mad dreams of a mad mind, just like the voice. He realized he was pacing and could not stop. He felt as if he had to move or his muscles would tear him apart in spasms.
"I am not mad," he panted.
"Not yet."
"I am not..."
The sound of the door opening made him whirl, hoping for Min. It was Rylan again, supporting a short, stocky woman in a dark blue dress, with hair more gray than not and a blunt face. A haggard, red-eyed face. He wanted to tell them to go away, to leave him alone. Alone. Was he alone? Was Luce Theron a dream? If only they would leave him. Idrian Tarson was the head of the school he had founded here in Kyrian. A woman so practical, he was not sure she believed in the One Power, since she could neither see nor touch it. What could reduce her to this state? He made himself turn toward her. Mad or not, alone or not, there was no one else to do what had to be done. Not even this small duty. Heavier than a mountain. "What is the matter?" he asked, making his voice as gentle as he could. Suddenly weeping, Idrian stumbled to him and collapsed against his chest. When she was coherent enough to tell her story, he felt like weeping too.